this week on The Inside Flap.
My very first client asked for a general reading, and I laid the cards out.
Oh, no.
And I got the Death card with a father figure. They were the first cards that I laid. And in my head, I could hear my teacher saying, you have to tell the truth. You can't wrap it up. So I took a deep breath and said, I've got the death of a father figure. Does that mean anything to you? And she said, yes, my dad died 2 weeks ago.
The Inside Flap is available on demand and every week on iTunes, Spotify, and around the world on theinsideflap.com. What more can we do for you?
Podcasting live from Littleton, Colorado, this is the Inside Flap Podcast, Inside Chat Edition for today. My name is Dave Medicus, and welcome to the show. Seated across the table to my right is Laura Medicus.
Howdy.
Howdy.
Music seems especially loud right now.
Yes, you gotta crank up that theme song when you get a chance. And there it goes. Anyway, welcome to the show. This is The Inside Flap here with you. Inside Chat today. We will be back next week with our regular episode. And Andrew, unfortunately, we have just been unbelievably, incredibly busy.
It is 9:52 right now, at night
Thursday night as we record this. Really, our first opportunity to record this. We do have a great, before we move on, we have a great show for you today. We're joined today by Ruth Hogan, best-selling author of The Keeper of Lost Things. Her new book is The Moon, The Stars, and Madame Barova. Had a really entertaining chat with Ruth Hogan. Can you tell?
Joe Rogan? Oh, man.
With Ruth Hogan. She was a lot of fun. Spoke to her. She was just outside of London when I talked to her. And listen, if you're into tarot cards,
I feel like I might be now.
You might be. Where do you hear? Yeah. She wrote this book about a character who reads tarot cards. She got really into it, so much so that she's actually giving readings herself now. And she promised me a reading myself when we go to England.
That's awesome.
In 2023 with the students, as we're taking a group of students there. Anyway, we have been busy. To illustrate for you guys out there, listener out there, how busy we have been, I got a little story for you. So not only am I working a new job with longer hours plus Saturday hours, Laura and I have both been working on the set for Sylvia's marching band at Littleton High School, which, strange as it may, I mean, when I was in marching band, you would say, what do you mean a set for a marching band? Well, marching bands are bigger and better and require more work than ever before. So we've been over there working on the sets. And of course, they all have a lot of platforms. They all have to be on wheels. And I guess we've been roped into, I was there over there tonight, once again, at her school.
I was there last night.
In the dark, under the lights.
We were both there Tuesday night.
In the school parking lot.
Yeah. Oh, and then one of the other dads brings a crime scene light, is what I like to call
it. Yeah, he brings a big old
big
white
flood.
Crime scene light.
It
really just gets right in your eyes.
It does.
Is what it does.
It does.
It
is helpful, though, to
it's
see.
Just been a lot of work. For instance, last Saturday... So last Saturday, I go into school to work on the set at my school for my play. Not a marching band, but an actual play. Midsummer Night's Dream we're doing. And we got a big set.
Never heard of it. Just kidding.
We have a huge set. So Saturdays are work day for the kids. We have a great crew of about 15 kids who show up. We work on the set, costumes, lights, sound, all that stuff. And we have a lot of work to do because we have to build... apparently... the audience we're going to put on the stage, and the stage is going to be in the audience. So now we have to build a stage to go over the seats in the audience. Goodness. And
hey, Dave,
we're going to put the fairies up in the balcony. So we have to put a platform up there and we have to build stairs to the balcony.
Next time, yeah, just put the audience where the audience goes. Make it easy.
I mean, right? Exactly. Yeah. Well, hey, listen,
it's
not
fine.
My idea.
That's fine.
I'm new there. I'm Mr. Yes Guy right now. And it's going to be
cool.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So Saturday, I get up early. Of course, I got to swing by the grocery store to pick up the donuts for the kids, bagels, juice. And we get to work. Now, the funny thing is, now listen, I'm all about safety. All right. I'm safety first. I'm Mr. Safety.
Sure.
Well, when it comes to the kids.
Oh, okay.
But we're building these platforms.
Okay, no problem. I'm not going to bring up any past Christmas ornament.
Okay. All right. Let's not bring up that. Don't worry about that. You can go back to past episodes where that story was recounted. A student may or may not have chucked an ornament across the stage in a joking manner and hit a girl right above the eye. Anyway, we're building these platforms, and I put a few supports in, and I'm getting ready to pick it up and put it over the seats. They're like, whoa, Dave, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, well, we got this platform built. We're good to go. Well, let's set it up over the seats, see how it fits. No, you need more support. A kid can't get on that. Like, what are you talking about? I'm looking at two crossbeam supports on either side. It looks beautiful.
Yeah.
Like, no, you don't understand. These kids are crazy. So we end up, I'm like, all right, you do what you got to do. I turned around, started work on the legs on another platform, turned back. It's as if they're building a platform for the elephants to stand on at Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus.
They
got like hundreds of dollars worth of lumber invested in this platform. I'm like, guys, we working on a budget here. Can we scale it back? So the whole time, and you know, I'm the new guy, so they're not listening to me. They've got a history at this school. And I guess it turns out there was an actor last year or 2 years ago who liked to get up there and stomp around. And he literally put a hole through the thing. So there is some history. But at the same time, let's use a little common sense. So anyway, so that's going on for me all morning long. Get off at 1 o'clock Saturday, head home. You are at...
That sounds so aggressive.
Well,
accusatory.
What I'm saying is, meanwhile, you're with Sylvia at her marching band competition where they have a performance in the morning and a performance at night.
Yeah, I was. Right?
And they've got all the props there and everything. So I drive home and I was like, I got a little time to myself. Let me sit down here, watch a little college football, make myself a little sandwich. I toasted the bread, sliced some cheese up, got some Dijon mustard on there. Just sit down, take a bite out of the sandwich when, what is this? A phone call's coming through. You are calling me, and I got the hot message. Dave, you got to get over here. These platforms are falling apart. You need to, that whole first show was a disaster. These carts are all over the place. So,
not quite what I said, but one cart fell apart.
Yeah, it fell apart. It fell apart.
Broke.
Broke. That's it. Broke.
It was 120 degrees on Saturday.
Yes.
And there was a hot, dry wind.
So now,
and it blew this cart down some concrete steps, and it completely broke.
Because the back of the carts have these PVC pipes, and they have
a sail, basically.
A sail with images where they're replicating this bazaar, a marketplace. So, of course, I got to now grab the sandwich, hop in the truck, grab my toolbox, head over to the competition, take a look at what's going on, and the wheels that were put onto this, affixed to this cart.
I saw it immediately.
Were affixed by screws. Not by me, by the way.
I didn't know that at the time. Yeah.
But the screws were too short. So, yeah, of course, as soon as this platform hit a little bump, the wheels came off.
Yeah.
So now
I'm surprised they didn't come off if you lift them off the ground. Yeah, like that's how
very surprising.
Poorly it was done.
I had to go. So we go over to the Home Depot. We grab some screws. Go back to the competition where they're getting ready for their evening performance. I start going to town on these nine different carts. I lay the nine different carts on their side. I'm screwing. I'm hammering. And meanwhile, there's all these parents wandering around staring at me now. A lot of them Littleton parents from Sylvia School just watching.
Yeah.
Watching me.
Yeah.
Does anybody come up and say, hey, do you need a hand?
What's
no.
up with
you,
that?
You know who comes over? The guy who put the wheels in. And I had to awkwardly stand there. It's obvious. I'm literally unscrewing all the short screws, putting in longer screws. And he's just kind of standing there awkwardly. What's going on? What do you got? Well, these screws are too short. Oh, all right. And then he just kind of wanders off. I'm like, okay, great. Thanks for your assistance. So do all that, get all that done, you know, finally get to kick back and enjoy the show. And the show starts, the band sounds great, they look great. And within 2 seconds, one of the cards, whoop, a wind catches it and it goes flying right upside down.
Let's just so be now, glad a kid wasn't behind
I get to stare at the bottom of the cart
so
that
awful.
I just fixed.
Oh, that was so
the
awful.
The entire show.
Yeah.
Couldn't enjoy the marching band performance at all.
I had trouble enjoying it too because I'm just
staring at the underside of this cart, this OS unpainted OSB. That was another thing I was doing tonight, painting car. It's just been so. The point is this, listener. We will be back next week. I think we're pretty much almost done with the work
also,
over at Littleton.
It's been homecoming week.
Homecoming's
which you
going
would
on.
Think wouldn't be a big deal, but
no.
I guess when your
yeah,
kid
no,
is
it's a big deal.
Is That's a crazy a deal, extrovert yeah. and is also a member of the marching band.
Right.
Those two things combined for like the like
There's
I don't
a lot
know.
Going on.
It's a lot. It's a, an it's, awful
it's,
lot.
It's a lot going on.
Yeah.
Anyway, we do have a great interview for you today and a great book to talk about. The book is The Moon, the Stars, and Madame Barova. The author is Ruth Hogan. Now, this story tells the story of Madame Barova, a woman who inherited her tarot card reading practice from her mother in the 1970s and is now getting ready to retire. And there's a timeline that is set in the present. And the story switches back and forth to the 70s and to modern day. We also meet a woman named Billy in this current timeline. She has just found out that she is a foundling, and now she has to search for her heritage, for her parents, a mystery that deepens throughout the book. We go back and forth between these timelines, and it's a lot of fun reading about Madame Barova and how she got her start reading tarot cards, her clients, the other characters at this holiday fair where she works, including the motorcycle riding daredevil who strikes Madame Barova's fancy. There are some serious issues tackled here, such as racism and sexism. I talked with Ruth a little bit about that. The book itself is a lot of fun, a great sense of humor, an intriguing mystery, and plenty of sparky, eccentric characters to pique your interest and keep you reading. And what I understand, according to Ruth, is one of her trademarks, plenty of lovable dogs.
So that's
great.
Awesome.
Yeah, there's some really, really great dogs
I'm a sucker for
in
that.
This book. I know you are. So I highly recommend this book, The Moon, the Stars, and Madame Barova. And now, without further ado, here she is, best-selling author, the fantastic Ruth Hogan. I can't tell you how much I really enjoyed your book, The Moon, the Stars, and Madame. Do you say Barova? How do you say it?
Barova.
Yes.
Yeah. I actually, I stole the name from a woman I know who's a consultant dermatologist. She's a consultant at a hospital near here, but she's also a great book collector.
Oh, really?
And she's an amazing woman. And when I was writing the book, I thought, God, I love that name, so I'm going to steal it. And I did kind of ask her, but she didn't really have the choice.
So she was voluntold, basically, to have her name used.
That's a good phrase. She was voluntold. That's exactly right, yeah.
Well, I love this tale, a story of tarot cards, unicyclists, and some very special four-legged friends. Ruth, what was it that inspired you to write this book?
Well, I've always been fascinated by tarot and fortune-telling and that kind of thing. And I like to write about stuff that I have a real passion for because I think it makes it easier to sustain. And it comes out in the writing if you've got a passion for it and you enjoy it.
Yes.
And there's a lady called Eva Petrolengo, and she was, she's still alive, but she was a famous tarot reader and fortune teller, and she came from a Romani background, and she had a booth on Brighton Pier. And one of the first times that I went there, I saw this booth where she used to read cards, and it sparked something in me, and I thought, I want to write about that. I want to write about a tarot reader and a fortune teller. So I read her autobiographies, and I kind of researched her life, and that was really the starting point for the book. That's where I started from.
Huh. Now, how old were you when you saw this booth?
It was only a few years ago.
Oh, okay. All right. Wow.
But yeah. I've always been fascinated. It's one of those things that I always thought, oh, I must get my cards read. And then I didn't do it, and I didn't do it. And then I was a bit scared, and then I didn't do it. And then I knew that if I wrote this book, I would have to do all of that stuff. I'd have to plunge in and do all of it. So I did.
So you have had your cards read?
Yes, many times now.
Oh, many times, really?
Well, because I learned to read cards in order to write the book.
Well, you do write about it very convincingly. Like, I was convinced you knew how to read cards.
I do. I do now. Because what I did was, initially, when I was doing the research, I had some readings done. And then through kind of asking around and trying to research to find someone who was really good, I found this amazing woman who has been reading for over 30 years. And she's got clients all over the world.
Wow.
And she did some readings for me. And then I came clean and said, actually, I'm writing a book.
Oh, Phil, did she slam really the door in your face and said, how dare you use me?
Well, this is the thing. When do you tell them?
That's true.
I didn't want to tell her first.
You can't tell them up front, no.
But fortunately, she took it really well. And she said, you do realize that I run courses on how to learn how to do it. So I did a beginner's course. And then I was totally hooked, and I thought, right, I'm going to do the advanced course as well. So then I started reading for strangers as well, and I still do that sometimes. So I felt to write about her, I had to know what it felt like. Like, it's one thing knowing the mechanics, it's one thing knowing how to do it. It's an entirely different thing, understanding what it feels like to have a stranger sit in front of you, you deal their cards and tell them what the cards say.
So when you went to these consoles, so this was going on
while
I'm I'm laughing with you. I have never done it. I've always been fascinated. I mean, it's a fascinating thing to think about,
it
really. And especially,
thing,
yeah. Like you said, this woman has incredible credibility. If she's got clients all around the world, when you went to these consultations, do you take the advice that you're given? Is it advice? What elucidate me? Maybe I'm not understanding what happens in a consultation.
You can have different kinds of readings. So when I first went, I had a general reading. So that looked at my past, my present, and my future. And this woman knew nothing about me.
Right.
She didn't know anything about me. And what she told me, particularly about my personality and how I am, was so accurate.
Wow.
And she also talked about the kind of things I like doing, the kind of people in my life. And that's why I chose her, because she was incredibly accurate. And one of the things that I found astonishing when I was learning was that on each course, there was only three of us. And we had to read for complete strangers. So we would meet at her place of business, and she would invite complete strangers to come and be guinea pigs, and we would read for them. Now, I can't tell you how terrifying that
is. It sounds so terrifying.
So scary. Because the other thing she told us was, you have to be honest. You can't change what the cards say.
Yeah.
So you have to be honest. And the first time, after I'd done my courses and everything, the first time I did kind of professional, if you like, card readings, was at a summer fete, and my very first client, and I was charging, but I was giving the money to charity.
Okay.
My very first client asked for a general reading, and I laid the cards out.
Oh, no.
And I got the death card with a father figure. They were the first cards that I laid.
That does not sound good.
I'm sitting there thinking, how do I say this? And in my head, I could hear my teacher saying, you have to tell the truth. You can't wrap it up. So I took a deep breath and said, I've got the death of a father figure. Does that mean anything to you? And she said, yes, my dad died 2 weeks ago.
Whoa.
So I was, it still sends shivers up my spine when I say that now. But
I got chills. I just got chills. Yes.
Yeah. I didn't know whether to punch the air because I'd got it right or to feel really bad that I just said, your dad's dying. I mean, luckily with the rest of the reading, there was more positive stuff.
Okay, good.
But to me, that was a real kind of, a real moment.
Man, yeah, I would have done a little victory jig and then just would have apologized. Because, you're not gonna see that person again.
I did it kind of quietly under the table. My knees were going.
Yes, I got the gift. Did you spend more time writing the book or practicing reading the cards? Now, be honest.
Probably about the same amount of time. Wow. Probably about the same amount.
Are you still doing it? Do you still do it?
Yeah.
Do you? Yeah. Really? Wow.
I haven't done very much because partly because I'm writing another book now. Wow. And also because of COVID, we've not been able to go anywhere. We haven't been able to meet people.
Right.
But I have done a couple of remote readings, which is another thing that my teacher does. And I was a bit skeptical about that. Like, how do you do that? But I've done a couple for people where they've contacted me and said, can you just ask the cards about such and such for me? And I've done two or three, and I've been told that they've been really accurate. So
wow, look at you, a new career.
It's addictive. It's very addictive. I bet it is. Once you start doing it, yeah. It's really addictive. Yeah. So.
Well, I loved how in the book one of the clients that Madame Barova had.
One
of the clients, he kept coming to her because he wanted to keep arguing with his wife.
Yeah.
He was addicted to spatting with his wife. I thought that was
They were still each trying to have the last word.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That is some ultimate last wordism going on right there.
That certainly is, yeah.
And there's a lot of humor in this book. Do you always try to make a point of putting humor in this in your books?
I do, because I like to cover more serious subjects, and I think in Madame Barova I do that. You know, yeah. I cover uncomfortable subjects, mm-hmm. but I think to get the reader to engage with that, you have to have a counterpoint. You have to have humour, mm-hmm. and it's something that I was brought up with. My dad had an amazing sense of humour, and in the darkest times, he would always find something funny to say. Mm. And I think that's what we do in life. I think that's how we cope with the dark times. Yeah. We make a joke of it, or we try and find humor in it, because mm-hmm. I think that's where the hope is. And I try to write books that are hopeful, but also I love writing funny things. I like making people laugh.
Yeah, I definitely slapped my knee a couple of times while reading this book. There were some good jokes in there, so I did enjoy it. But also, you know, I mean, you got me. You know, got me right here in the old ticker. I'm pointing to my heart right now. So it really, you know, it's very has a great deal of sentimentality to it, and you know, is a very, very moving book. And you deal with some heavy subject. This is a book that goes back. Most of it, you know, is taking place, or a lot of it is taking place in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And you deal with some heavy topics like sexism and racism. Was that something important for you to deal with those heavy topics?
It was, because I'm a bit of a perfectionist, which is why I learned to read tarot so thoroughly. And I knew that if I was writing about the 70s, I needed to be honest, because if it's going to be authentic, then you can't pretty it up. You can't make it what it wasn't. And I grew up in the 70s. And so I experienced firsthand what it was like in those days. Mm. And I think, looking back on it now with perspective, it makes it worse. You kind of look back and think, God, that was accepted. That's how people spoke. It was on the TV. It was on the radio. It was everywhere. And it was horrendous. Mm-hmm. But also, when I was, because I worked in race equality and gender equality for 10 years in a previous career.
Oh, wow.
And I kind of checked back on things, and we don't kind of seem to remember, but there was no legislation back in the early 70s to protect against race and gender discrimination in this country. Mm. I mean, there was no legislation. There was no way you could go for justice, if you like. So it was just acceptable. And I wanted to write about it, but I wanted my characters to come through. I didn't want them to be victims. I wanted them to show that there was a way forward. And hopefully I've managed to achieve that in some cases. But I wanted it to be honest. I wanted to write honestly about that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I do think you captured it perfectly. And these are very powerful characters. In fact, you set it up from the very beginning of the book with the very first line of the book. Madame Barova was a woman who knew where the bodies were buried. I mean, that's just a great first line. I love that first line. I was hooked. I mean, it didn't take me too long to get hooked into the book. I was like, yes, I'm all in. Let me hear more about this Madame Barova. Was that a line that just came to you, or did you work on that? Are you a believer? I'm in the believer of a good, strong opening line. Hook me from the very beginning. And your book did that. What's your take on first lines?
I am a big believer in having great first lines, mm-hmm. because I'm not a patient person. I read a lot of books and I have to get hooked quick.
Yes.
Like if it doesn't get me straight away, then my mind wanders.
Exactly.
So I need to get hooked straight away. And my first book, The Keeper of Lost Things, that has a first line which gets quoted back at me so many times, because people always say to me, I was hooked because I had no idea what you were talking about. And that's a great thing too.
Yep,
you know, if people want your readers to read that first line and go, I have to read some more, mm-hmm. because I need to know what happens.
Yeah.
But the Madame Barova one, it just popped into my head. And I thought, yeah, I like that. So I'm going to use it.
Nice. Yeah. It is a good one. And how long, so when you're reading a book, how long do you generally give it before you toss it to the side and say, I can't take it anymore?
The older I've got, the less patient I've got.
Me too. Me too.
I've got, well, you know, life's too short.
Exactly.
Life's too short for you to keep trying and trying. You shouldn't have to keep trying.
Right. Exactly.
And also I get sent a lot of pre-publication proofs to read. And so I have to be quite selective. So I kind of think, in the first few pages, if I'm not wanting to carry on, then quite often now I'll just go, I don't have the time. It's harsh, isn't it? God, I sound really harsh.
First couple of pages. But like you said, you get so many manuscripts, I'm sure, wanting blurbs and all this kind of stuff, where you have to be proactive. You have to learn how to say no.
I have to select in some way or another. And you know, and also, you know, that's how, when before you're published, that's how you get selected. My agent in the UK, her submission guidelines are send me the first three pages. That's it. She didn't want any more.
Wow.
And that was a real kind of lesson for me. It was like, well, if I don't hit it in the first three pages, that's it. I'm gone. So, and I've spoken to her about it since, and she said, I know in the first three pages, I know whether I want to read the rest of it. So it's wasting everyone's time if I get them to send more than that.
Yeah. And writers can just get too caught up in their own work by being too cute or whatever in the beginning. You know, just get to it. Get to it.
Yes,
tell me a story.
Yeah.
You're the storyteller. Let's go. We just want good stories. What your book is. Oh, it's got, you know what else it has in there? I liked a lot of great dogs, a lot of good dog stuff in this book. Are you big? You must be a big dog person.
Huge dog fan. And I was brought up with dogs, so they've always been in my life.
Mm.
And I always have a selection of rescue dogs, because all my dogs were always rescue dogs.
Nice.
And I never go looking for them. They always come to me, because everyone knows I'm a soft touch when it comes to dogs. So they come through my vet. They come through my vet nurse. So I've got three at the moment.
Oh, wow.
But also, I love the way that dogs, if you're writing and you use dogs, you can use the dogs to tell your reader about the characters, because they're such great judges of character.
Yeah.
So it's a great device to use as a writer. mm-hmm. to tell your reader about the characters around them. And also, like in Madame Brova, I mean, you know, Grisha, the Borzoi, has such an important role to play because he tells you who the villains are, he tells you who the good guys are. And so, yeah, and also now my readers expect it. You know, as soon as I write a new book, they say, oh, how many dogs are in here? It's kind of like, yeah, I have to have them.
I see. That's good. Well, you know, of all the things that you want to include in your books, I mean, having dogs in there is a great thing. Did you always want to be a writer?
Yes, always. But I think that came from the fact that I loved reading. My mum taught me to read before I went to school. And I always said, you know, I was brought up in a house full of books and it was the greatest gift my parents could have given me.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't matter what else is going on in your life. If you can escape into a book. I remember my dad was evacuated in the Second World War. And he was only about 7 when he was evacuated. And he was evacuated with one of his brothers. And he said that no matter how bad things were, if he could go to bed and hide under the covers with a torch and read a book, it took him somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And he used to read to me when I was a child at night. When I went to bed, he used to read. And he would do all the voices. I remember him reading Treasure Island to me, and he'd be the pirate, and he'd be the good guys and the bad guys. So I was brought up with that magic of storytelling. And I think my love of reading then became the desire to produce those stories myself. And I was always writing little things. But when I finished uni, it kind of, but this is so bad to say this, but it feels like, you know, writing isn't a proper job. You can't say, oh, I'm going to be a writer. I'm going to write books and I'll be really successful at that. So it was kind of, I'll get a proper job and I'll have a proper career, but then I'll try and write. So all through my adult life, I've kind of had this idea that I would write, but it just took me a long while to actually get my butt in gear and start writing. And once I started, it's kind of like a compulsion. So I think even if I hadn't been published, I would still be writing because it's something that I have to do. But when I got my first publishing deal, honestly, I walked around like a zombie for weeks because I just couldn't believe that it had come true. And the other thing is, as a writer, you get paid for being yourself. And I'd had kind of quite a few sensible jobs where I'd been very sensible and I'd dressed sensibly and I'd behaved sensibly. And that wasn't really who I was.
Right. Sounds terrible. So sounds awful.
It's a huge joy to do a job where you can just be who you are.
Yeah. Yeah.
And people pay you to be who you are. It's great.
That's awesome. Were you working this sensible job when you wrote your first book? Were you able to write all the time where you had this other job, or?
Not initially, no. Because when I first left uni, I worked in local government, and that's where I worked in diversity and racial equality and all that stuff. And then when I was in my early 30s, I had a car accident, which left me with a chronic injury. So I had to give up working full time. Mm. And there was a horrible court case because it wasn't my fault. Somebody drove into the back of me. So there was all this stuff going on. And I ended up not being able to work full time, but I had to have a job to pay the bills and the mortgage. So I got a job as a receptionist, and I have to say it was not the best receptionist. I'm not really cut out to be a receptionist, but I was working part-time, so that gave me the option to start writing properly.
Cool.
And so that's when I started doing it. And it's interesting because once I started, it really did become an obsession. And there's that point, and I've spoken to other writers about this, where when you're not a professional writer, but you're trying to become published, it takes up all your spare time. And I think people who just kind of write as a hobby don't understand how much time you have to dedicate to it. And there were times when I felt kind of guilty because I wasn't spending time with my family. I wasn't spending time with my friends. Like all my spare time was taken up writing. And there comes a point in your life where you think, is this fair? Because if I don't ever get published, this is all, it's not for nothing because I've enjoyed the process. But when do you decide?
Yeah, it's hard, yeah.
And fortunately, I did get published. So I could say, well, at least, you know, when I wasn't going out to lunch, when I wouldn't come out with you and when I wouldn't meet with you, you know, right. This is the reason. I had a good reason.
And now all your spare time is taken up reading cards.
Well, not all of my spare time. I have to walk the dogs as well.
Well, you got it. That's true. You do have to walk the dogs. Do you have any like interesting writing quirks that you do while you write or that you have to have in place when you're writing?
Do I have any? It's more likely yes, I do. When I describe myself as being a method writer.
Oh, I love that.
So when I'm writing a book,
yes,
I kind of get totally absorbed into the world of the book. So I learn to read tarot, I do all of that stuff. But also I create a physical world around me. So in my writing space, I will have lots of things that relate to the book that I'm writing. So for example, with Madame Bareva, I had crystal balls, I had tarot cards, you know, I had old postcards from holiday camps, pictures of Brighton, so all of this stuff. And I surround myself with that, and that's how I write. And I have a very strict writing process in that I write everything longhand. So I write chapter by chapter, I write longhand, I transpose it onto the laptop, I print it off, I edit it, and then I go on to the next chapter.
Wow.
So I never kind of rush off a first draft. By the time I get to the end of the book, I will edit very little. It will then go to my agent for her to look at it. So I edit as I go along. And the whole writing longhand thing, I've tried doing it other ways and I just can't do it. I have to write longhand to start with. And it's frustrating because when I was writing Madame Braver, I actually had a hand problem and I had to get treatment on it. And they said, you have to rest it for several weeks while you're having treatment. Otherwise, you'll end up with a permanent problem. And I was right in the middle of writing the book. So it was so frustrating because I couldn't actually write anything. And I was having all these ideas in my head and I was having to jot it down with my left hand. And so, yeah, I do. I have lots and lots of you know, these weird quirks that I follow. Yeah.
That's cool. Well, it definitely works for you. And, you know, that's an interesting process that you have as you edit when you go along. Really cool. All right, Ruth, it is time now for our segment we call Quick Six, Six Quick Questions, in which we, I find out just a little bit more about you. Here we go. Ruth Hogan, what is the last show you watched or binged and really enjoyed?
Breaking Bad.
Oh, man, we're a little late to the party on that one, aren't you?
Very, very late to the party, but completely hooked and addicted.
It's so, so good. And you can't, that's one you have to keep watching and binging. Bryan Cranston and that's so amazing. How about this? What fictional world or place would you like to visit?
Oh, God. I'm not very quick at answering.
No worries.
Where would I like to go?
And we'll let you back in if you don't want to stay there, just for a quick visit.
Okay, as long as I don't have to stay there. just for a visit, where would I go? I think I would go to the world of The Great Gatsby.
Oh, wow, really?
I would go there, yeah.
Awesome.
Great costumes.
Absolutely.
Great lifestyle. Very, very interesting characters.
Yeah.
So I think I'd go there.
It'd be great to talk to Jay and really find out what's going on. And Nick, nice. And beautiful and great parties, too. I mean, let's not.
Fabulous
you know,
parties. Yeah, fabulous dresses. Great cars. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You really live it up.
Maybe I could read his cards for him.
Oh, there you go. He would really be into that. Yeah, definitely. It'd be a nice little side hustle for you. How about this? Give us a one of your top five favorite movies of all time.
Moonstruck.
Oh, yeah. Nicolas Cage.
Love that
young
film.
Nicolas Cher. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is a good one.
Olympia Dukakis. Mm, it just had loads of dogs. Lots of dogs. Great car.
There's a lot of dogs in that one. Cujo, you're a fan of the movie Cujo. Do you know that? No, we don't want.
I don't know. Should I? Is that?
It was a Stephen King book about a rabid dog that that attacked.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I might check that out now then.
No, you don't want to. You don't want to. No, you don't want to. How about this? This one might be a little bit tougher. One of your top five favorite books of all time.
Okay. No one will have heard of this book.
Okay.
But hopefully you'll go and check it out now.
Of course.
It's the book that made me want to write in that kind of way. And it's a book called Mornings at Seven by a guy called Eric Malpass.
You're right. I've never heard of that.
You've never heard of it. You should check it out. It's probably out of print now, but it's an amazing, amazing book.
Huh. Okay.
And the other one, I'll give you another one that you have heard of, which is To Kill a Mockingbird, which I still go back and read because it's just so beautifully written.
Timeless. Absolutely timeless. Mm-hmm. And always, always important to read that book. And still being read here in schools everywhere. So.
Yes. Yeah. And the fact that it has stood the test of time. Mm-hmm. And it's still an amazing story even now. I mean, yeah.
It is amazing because it is the gold standard. And, you know, why wouldn't it be? And I think it always will be. So, yeah, good stuff. How about this, Ruth? Do you have a go-to karaoke song?
I have never,
ever
sung karaoke in my life.
Really?
I've never sung karaoke, no. Yeah. Is that bad?
No. That's a good thing, I think. I mean, it's such a hack activity to do, but some people love it.
That doesn't mean that I don't sing when I've had a drink. I do.
What sorts of songs can we expect you to be singing around the house after a cocktail?
Probably a bit of U2, a bit of John Bon Jovi.
Oh, nice.
A bit of Blondie, Debbie Harry, Big Dog,
yeah.
And David Bowie. David Bowie was my hero.
Yeah.
I was lucky enough to see him a couple of times live and blown away. Just
awesome.
Amazing.
That's great. Very good. All right. We'll accept those submissions.
Okay,
nice.
Thank you. Good. I passed that one. Check.
And finally, Ruth Hogan, what book are you currently reading?
I am currently reading The 13th Tale by Diana Setterfield.
Okay. Yeah. I have heard of that.
Have you read that one?
I have not read it. No.
Right. Well, when I say reading, that's not strictly true. I'm listening to it on Audible books.
Yeah.
Because I try to maximize my reading time now by having a paper copy and an Audible book.
Yeah, you have to. I do the same thing. You know, it makes the drive better. It makes my runs better. Absolutely. It's nice to have
whatever thing that you're doing that you need distracting from.
Exactly.
It's a great way of doing it. But yeah, it's a good book. I'm enjoying it. It's kind of spooky. Well written. So that's the one at the moment.
All right, very nice. Well, speaking of well written, loved The Moon, the Stars, and Madame Barova. Really,
you're very
great
kind.
Title. Well, it's true. And keep reading those cards for people and keep, send them away happy. You haven't had any arguments or anything arise out of your card reading?
Not so far, but you never know. And hey, if you come over to London in a couple of years, I'll do your cards for you.
Yes. All right. I'm marking that down. We're going to be there. Spring break 2023.
Right. I'll put it in the diary.
Okay.
Spring.
Mark that down.
Read Dave's cards for him.
That's right. Awesome. All right, Ruth. Listen, thanks so much for chatting. It's been a lot of fun. Really appreciate your time. Really, really appreciate
thanks
it.
Thanks so much for having me. Thank
you. Got it.
It's been great. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. The
Inside Flap. All right, so there you go. You heard that promise. You heard that promise.
That's nice.
A year and a half from now, Ruth, I'm tracking you down. Let's go. Read my cards. Ooh. I want to...
No pressure, but maybe she'll have another book out by then.
You know, during that interview, I kept wanting to say... Will you? Can I get a reading right now? You know, because she was talking about doing it over Zoom, but I didn't have the nerve to. And
you don't want to disrupt the whole thing. You make it all about yourself. I mean, come on.
Yeah, that would have been. But anyway, thanks so much to Ruth Hogan. The book is The Moon, the Stars, and Madame Barova.
Great title.
It really is, and it's a great book. So enjoy it, and hopefully we'll be back next week with our normal show. See you then.
Adios.
At Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus.